This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague, Colonel Grant Newsham, United States Marine Corps retired, author of When China Attacks recently on Voice of America, Chinese edition, to review the Chosin Reservoir Retreat, Thanksgiving 1950, a Marine Corps victory in the other direction. The 1st Marine Division, trapped near the Chosin Reservoir, had one road to get to the sea and took it despite the fact that the Chinese Red Army was all around them on the hillsides and peppered the retreat through icy conditions all the way down. Grant recently spoke with Voice of America about this effort, and I'm presuming this was made available to the Chinese audience everywhere, but especially on the mainland. Grant, a very good evening to you. Your conversation was enlightening about being a Marine. You especially focused on the general commanding the 1st Division in its retreat, General Smith. He was controversial and he was successful. What do we need to remember about him?
Well, he was the one general, General O.P. Smith, Oliver Prince Smith, and his performance at the Chosin Reservoir saved the 1st Marine Division and probably saved the entire Marine Corps from being disbanded. And it was because of his willingness to sort of buck orders from higher headquarters to take on the irrational exuberance that was demanding everybody get as fast as possible up to the border with China, to northernmost North Korea. General Smith knew this was dangerous. He had a sense that the Chinese were going to attack, and he positioned the 1st Marine Division so it could withstand the initial Chinese onslaught. Other units that did not do that, army units in particular, literally got vaporized. So the 1st Marine Division, thanks to General Smith's mental fortitude, was able to withstand the assault and then fight his way out to safety. And this is really one of the great battles in history.
And because this is a Chinese audience, what was the thinking of Voice of America? Why did they want to tell this story now?
Well, Xi Jinping has been talking up the Korean War as a great Chinese victory. And he's suggesting that, well, China did so well in the Korean War that it maybe ought to try it again or try a fight like that because China's great and can handle it. And he's presenting the Chosin battle as a great success, whereas in actual fact, it wasn't. The Marines were outnumbered one division to six or seven. And the Marines fought their way out and destroyed most of those Chinese divisions. And at the end of the day, yes, the Korean War was a stalemate, but you know, look at the next 60, 70 years. South Korea is a great success. North Korea is an impoverished hellhole. And after the Korean War, the Chinese went through the Cultural Revolution, a great leap forward, probably had 50 million people killed in peacetime and good weather by the Chinese regime. And it was a very poor place. In some respects, it still is. So it's important that Xi Jinping, like dictators everywhere, don't overestimate themselves or underestimate what Americans, what free people are capable of doing. The Chosin Reservoir story is a very good one if you draw the right lessons from it.
74 years later, the same Chinese mainland under the control of the Communist Party is preparing to attack East Asia. Are we preparing, as General Smith did, in your opinion, Grant?
Well, we at least recognize we've got a problem coming. I don't know that we're preparing as fast as we should. The military is trying to sort of build some bases throughout the region and to get ready to operate in the Pacific, but the U.S. military did allow itself to lapse over the last 20, 30 years after the Cold War ended. And when I say the U.S. military, it's not leprechauns we're talking about. It's very senior officers and very senior civilian officials who did not do their job. So we're very late to get started catching up. But we at least realize we've got a problem. It's sort of like a drunkard who realizes he's an alcoholic. The first step is to recognize it. But we are at least starting. We've really been at it for about 3-4 years now. But we've got a long way to go.
What is Agile Combat Employment Plan?
Well, it's something the U.S. Air Force has come up with, and it's a scheme really to be able to operate from a number of different locations, different airfields throughout the entire Asia Pacific. rather than being concentrated on bases in Japan, Korea, and Guam, which are obviously easy targets to China's rocket force. But if you can operate from, say, 100 different airfields on different islands and different parts of the region, well, you're a harder target to attack. And you're also able to attack your enemy from a number of different directions, should he make a move your way. So it's a good effort by the Air Force to spread out and stay alive. It's overdue, but it is a good thing to see.
What is the Marine Corps' preparation for this attack by the Chinese across this vast landscape of islands?
One thing the Marines are doing is something called Force Design 2030. They've removed the 2030 because they're not quite sure when it's going to happen. But it involves breaking the United States Marine Corps up into much smaller units, or employing it in very small units located throughout the region, but particularly the western edges of the Pacific, on small islands armed with long-range missiles and intelligence collection equipment. And the idea is that they will take shots at Chinese ships that come within range. So you're spreading out, being able to fire from a number of different directions. But one of the problems that nobody can quite answer is that they're not really telling, well, where are you going to put these units? How are you going to hide them? How are you going to keep them from being discovered? How are you going to supply them? And could the role be played by unmanned aerial vehicles, by drones, or by long-range aircraft, or by even the other services? So, if you ask these questions of the people who put the plan together, you're told you're stupid, you're antiquated, you just don't understand modern warfare. But in some ways, modern warfare is no different than old warfare. And it does seem as though this plan was done and put together without anybody thinking of the logistics plan. So, the Marines are using that as their main sort of initiative, while trying to also maintain adequate, just regular combat power to deploy throughout the region. But one did get a whiff of Robert McNamara's whiz kids, who had an answer for everything when this plan was rolled out. It has its uses, but the Marines are still thinking through how they're going to operate and how they're actually going to make it work in practice.
The People's Liberation Army are preparing with fortifications across the Pacific, and I'll touch on some of them because Grant has a piece in the New York Sun about the preparation for China to attack. We start with the one closest into Hawaii, I believe, Kiribati. What are the Chinese doing there, Grant?
Well, they're going to build an airfield on an island called Canton Islands, about 2,000 miles from Pearl Harbor. And as with all of these infrastructure efforts by the Chinese, these presence efforts to get presence and influence, it's all under the cover of commercial economic development in these places. But there's obviously a dual use to this. So Kiribati, they've pretty much subverted the entire government. And now they're going to refurbish this old American field on Canton Island. And the Americans actually have a treaty which should prevent this, but nobody's interested in enforcing the treaty. And anyway, how are you going to do it? Send in the Marines? So the Chinese are playing the game very well. It's under, as I said, a commercial guise, but they're laying the infrastructure for eventually the People's Liberation Army, all parts of it, to be able to operate through the region, throughout the region, if this trend continues unchecked.
And Solomon Islands, a threat to our ally, Australia. What are they doing there?
Well, they've completely got the government. They've paid it off, and the government of the Solomon Islands is ruled by a party, administration, regime, really, that is completely in China's pocket. They are going to actually extend Henderson Field, which was the main airfield during the Marines' defense of the island in 1942. They've got land and business interests all over the place. There are ports and airstrips elsewhere in the Solomon chain where the Chinese have a presence, where they've clearly got interest in laying the groundwork. And they were going to actually buy the entire island of Tulagi, which is famous from World War II. This was a few years ago, to make it a base for the People's Liberation Army, of all things. The local women's groups, or local women who have a lot of influence in the Solomons, actually stopped that. But the Chinese are persistent, and pretty much the Solomons is in their pocket now. They've even signed an agreement with the Solomons government, which allows the People's Liberation Army to deploy to Solomon Islands to protect China's interests.
There's also Chinese activity in the Federated States of Micronesia. We have 30 seconds, Grant. Is anybody listening in Washington? We're going to have a change of administration. 30 seconds.
Well, I hope they are. I would say nobody's been listening in the previous administration, right, or not been listening very much. Really, time is late. And this is all called political warfare. It appears that nobody in the military or the civilian side of things has any responsibility for political warfare, assuming we even understand what it is. And I don't think we do. A prominent State Department official testified before Congress not long ago, was asked this question. He said, "Could you tell me what political warfare is?" Well, that tells you what kind of a mess we're in.
Grant Newsham, when China attacks.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.